Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Monday, and it's the morning. Monday morning, April the 18th, and Monday mornings mean a podcast with Jimmy Sexton, CEO of the Esquire Group, located in Dubai. And for listeners, as you know, we've been exploring the great work of Charles Adam, Taxes and Civilization, and the impact of taxes on civilization, meaning that yes, taxation makes a difference. And today we have reached lesson 18 about great wealth. And specifically, the lesson is great wealth, as if by magic, disappears when governments adopt taxation to soak the rich. The rich have always had the means to escape heavy taxation. Good morning, Jimmy. How are you today?
I'm doing well, John. I've been waiting for 18 since we've started this list.
I know I could tell that I could just see through the Zoom the excitement building as I was reading it word by word in anticipation of this great lesson today. Well, you know, we have all this provocative language, soak the rich, fair share, minimum tax.
Well, I mean, look, he puts here soak the rich. This was written 30 years ago, and he was only one word off from today's mantra, which is tax the rich.
Well, that's right. I mean, taxation has really, I think, become the principal form of weaponizing the state against its residents and citizens. I mean, you know, just think, you know, in 1917, if Russia had had a modern tax code, they never would have had to have gone and actually shot the Tsars. They just would have, you know, passed some confiscatory law, right?
Yep, exactly.
Well, you know, Jimmy, last week we took a bit of a diversion. We were talking about the UK non-dom issue and Rishi Sunak, you know, particularly. And, you know, you said something really interesting to me before we started the recording, and perhaps we could lead today with that.
Yeah, I mean, so I read an article that said the majority of UK voters are now in favor of getting rid of the non-dom regime. And I think I'm sure that makes for a great soundbite, and that makes for, you know, much like Brexit, it makes for great campaigning. But the truth of the matter is the non-doms utilize no UK services. They contribute £8 billion a year to the UK economy through buying real estate, using services, and paying value-added taxes and fees and all these other things. And I think it's very arrogant for the UK or any other of these high-tax countries to think that their country is so damn wonderful that people are just going to leave and, I mean, that people are just going to stay and pay these taxes. I mean, most of the people that are there on non-dom status are there because of the non-dom status. They're not there because the UK is this wonderful place that provides a great cost of living. They're there because there's a tax advantage to be had. And, most of the, you know, a lot of non-doms that live there, they complain about the UK, they complain about the housing and everything else, but provides them, you know, this tax advantage, which only has upside for the UK. These people are going to leave. They're going to leave.
Well, I mean, and those that don't leave, it's going to be a serious sort of downer in terms of the UK as a destination for migration. There's no doubt about that. I guess it was the French philosopher Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am." And, you know, these Western tax democracies or a lot of these parties are saying, "I see wealth there, therefore it will be taxed." I mean, it's that simple, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it really is. And what I think is so interesting about it all is the arrogance of these governments, and not just in the UK, but throughout Europe, the United States, that think that their country's just so damn wonderful that people are just going to stay no matter what. And I think, I mean, if you just read this book, you know, if history is any indicator, that is not the case. And as taxes go up, more wealth, more brain power is going to leave. And I'm going to help make a ton of money doing it.
I saw an extraordinary thing on Twitter yesterday. It was an article in the Los Angeles Times, relatively recent article. But anyway, what it said was something to the effect that 100,000 residents of California with $100,000 in income. What's that?
The same article, but tell the stats because it's incredible.
You know what? Have you got the stats firmly implanted in your brain? Maybe you should.
The one stat that I remember was that 100,000 residents pay 40% of the income tax.
That was what I was going to say. Okay, we agree on that. Now let's just pause for a minute, okay? One of the things about talking in terms of numbers is that they don't mean anything to people, right?
Yeah.
So what's the total population of California? Do you know?
40 million.
40 million. What's 100,000 over 40 million?
Give me a second.
It's a small number, I think.
Yeah. So 100,000 divided by 40 million, it's 0.25%.
Okay. So, I mean, just think about the gravity of that for a minute, okay?
0.25% of the population is paying 40% of the income tax.
Like, that is more than just a bunch of numbers, okay? That is unbelievably unfair, I think, by any standard, don't you think?
100%.
And now some of these people may have so much money that they're unlikely to leave. You know, they don't care. They just have so much money.
I think there's a few industries in California where there's some people that are somewhat trapped, right? I mean, some of the very highly paid, Silicon Valley executives, they don't have a choice, right? They have to be in California. And the companies kind of price their tax bill into their compensation.
And in other words, they pay them twice what they'd pay them if they were living in Texas or Florida.
Correct. And then you have the same thing in the entertainment industry in Southern California, right? So you kind of have Silicon Valley and Hollywood where, you know, you have to be in California. But again, the people are there because it's a requirement sort of for their career or for their job,
yeah.
But their compensation, you know, kind of factors that in as well. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, you know, absolutely incredible statistics where, I mean, not only is it shocking in and of itself, but let's say it were, you know, 10% pay 40% of the taxes, you know, even something like that. Seems to me to be a bit presumptively wrong, right? I mean, I think you'd have to have some specific reason, which I think should, in fairness, go beyond they just make more money, therefore they should necessarily pay more. I don't know. But
yeah. The
point, I think, is this, that a majority of people in these Western democracies are, or how can I put it? Would it be fair to say that more people are now voting for a living than working for a living?
Well, I think you shared this Wall Street Journal, New York Times article with me titled from Elizabeth Warren entitled "Democrats Can Avoid Disaster in November." For the sake of America, I hope that's not the case. But look, in her article, she's saying 75% of the country thinks corporations should pay more taxes and the wealthy should pay more taxes. Now, of course they do, especially when you consider that 56% of the population in the United States doesn't even pay any income taxes. right? So if you figure that 56% already aren't paying any income taxes, obviously they're going to vote, like you say, they vote for a living. They're obviously going to vote that anybody should pay more taxes because it doesn't impact them, right? Because anybody wealthier than them should pay. And then, you know, you have probably a small percentage in there, you know, let's say the you know, lower end millionaires are probably also saying that the super rich should pay more. And look, my guess is, I've never looked at the stats, but my guess is if you look at all the people paying the federal income taxes in the United States and you compare it to California, I bet you it's a tiny percentage that's also paying 40% of all the taxes in the United States. I bet you it's not so far off from what California's percentage is.
Yeah, I suspect that's true. You know, we look at this lesson 18 again. What's interesting is that the way it's phrased, the language, great wealth, as if by magic, disappears when governments adopt taxation to soak the rich. The rich have always had the means to escape heavy taxation. You know, what that triggers in my mind is this question. Do you think that income taxes, because such a relatively small percentage of people actually pay the income taxes in the United States, is actually a disguised form of wealth tax?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't limit that to the United States. I would certainly say it's a disguised form of wealth tax, especially when you think of capital gains taxes, right? Which is the appreciate, you're being taxed on appreciation of wealth, right? I mean, that's even more so than income tax from wages, in my opinion.
Well, you know, you make a really, really good point. I don't know whether you invested any of your time at all in reading the Biden Green Book, but you're presumably aware that a hot sort of tax topic over the last year or so in the United States has been attempts to basically make sure the transfers of property are taxed. And the latest Biden proposal is to treat them as a deemed disposition and tax them as a capital gain.
Well, but now let me add something in there, John. So I did study the Green Book, and it's something that I actually discussed with a mutual colleague of ours that we both know. And one of the things that popped out at me is you're 100% correct that he does propose taxing the any built-in capital gains at death, but the estate tax remains.
Yes, absolutely. Now, let's pause and focus on this for a minute. I just want to add something. Now, this, you know, Jimmy, you and I are the only two people that I'm aware of who are interested in tax history, actually. Okay, which, you know, this is why these discussions are always interesting. But in Canada, by way of comparison, in the 1970s, it was the same kind of discussion. You know, how do you tax dispositions of property? They did adopt the deemed disposition rule when gifts are made, but they specifically, very specifically, abolished the estate and gift tax at that time.
I mean, that's certainly, I mean, I'm not in favor of either, but the Canadian system certainly is more fair than the U.S. system.
Well, it's more rational and principled, right? I mean, at least it's... well, you know, we're going to confiscate this stuff one way or the other and not both, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think in these Western democracies, and I think especially the ultra liberals in the United States right now, have lost any sort of concept of fair and rational taxation, right? I think it's completely turned into, you know, how do we stay in power and appease the masses, right? And the only way to... And the best way to do that is, you know, to tax people, right? Keep most of it for the government, to spend on mostly things that get money spent abroad, right? I mean, very little of it actually goes to the citizens. Most of it goes to keep the government running. So I think that really the goal is to keep growing government and, you know, soak the rich to get the money to keep growing the government and give a little pittance to the masses to keep them happy.
Yeah, and a littler and littler a share every year. I had a discussion recently, and I hope that you can participate in the next one, about this, you know, the whole notion of, you know, I mean, should the income tax system even continue? Is it time to substitute it for what some people call a fair tax, you know, namely just a tax on consumption? And I don't know if you saw that interesting interview, tax analyst or tax analyst Robert Goulder interviewing Joe Thorndike, you know, where, I mean, you know, these are objective, you know, tax people who, you know, clearly make the point that a majority of people are not paying income taxes, right? But yet we have this unbelievable compliance burden. I mean, it's shocking, right, to comply with this system where, you know, whether you're a U.S. citizen living outside the United States, apparently, or whether you're a U.S. citizen living inside the United States, most of them, when the numbers are run, do not actually owe federal tax. Yet the cost to comply with this is just, as you know, mind-boggling.
I had a call with a new client last week, and these were her exact words to me. She says, you know, because she made more than the 400 income exclusion. She goes, and the only thing I get is a passport. I get no benefits from this living outside the United States other than a travel document.
Yeah.
She says, I don't even get Social Security because I haven't lived in the U.S. long enough to have paid into it.
That's right. Yeah, and the Medicare thing as well, sure.
Yeah, it's fundamentally unfair, right? I think that, you know, what would be really interesting is to see, I mean, I think that this is the exact number 18 is the moment in history that we're in at the moment. And, you know, we're already seeing house prices in Dubai doubling, right? And it's getting to the point where some people can't even afford Dubai. And, you know, they're looking at Saudi. They're looking at Bahrain. They're looking at other Qatar. They're looking at other places that offer tax-advantaged living. But there's a mass exodus. Now, specifically from Europe, I mean, I know so many wealthy people that have moved moved out of high tax countries to places with tax advantage living, whether that be Switzerland or, you know, the UAE or even the Caribbean, Panama, in the last 2-3 years, specifically for this reason, because the taxes literally became unbearable and they see the writing on the wall with the tax the rich. It's already happened.
Of course it's happening. Of course it's happening. The question is, how long is it going to take for this to play out? I mean, you know, it's slow erosion that is becoming very, very visible, but I think still slow erosion. What do you think these countries have to do? I mean, is this just a cycle that we go through where, you know, then everything collapses or what?
Look, I think that it definitely is a cycle that we go through. I mean, look, people are not going to hand over their money, right? I mean, because as you well know, the way this thing works, right, is they're going to start at the very top, the very, very wealthiest, right? And when those people start leaving and that doesn't produce enough revenue, they're going to start lowering the thresholds. So that it applies to these wealth taxes and higher income taxes and everything else apply to a greater number of people, right? And some of those people do not have the means to hire professionals to necessarily help them. Those are the people that are just gonna, you know, pack up their bags with gold bars or whatever else and just walk out of the country.
Yeah.
But at some point, I think it is cyclical. And at some point, I think it will collapse, right? At some point, these governments are going to come to the realization that nobody wants to live here anymore. And we need to turn this into an attractive place where people want to live in order to lure people back. I mean, that's why you see countries like Italy, for example, that, you know, created this, you know, they have a regime now as well where you don't pay tax on your foreign income if you live in Italy, if you meet certain criteria, right? It's very similar. Cyprus has one. Greece implemented a law to try to attract family offices, right? So a lot of these countries, even I heard Spain is even thinking about implementing one of these laws. So you kind of have these laws that apply to your everyday citizens that are, you know, long-term residents of the countries there. Portugal has very favorable laws. But then all of these high-tax countries that are crying about this and want to tax billionaires, at the same time, realize that people are leaving and they're creating their own sort of tax-advantaged living programs, saying, well, if you're really rich, you can also seek haven here, right? Like they try to tax their own really wealthy people to death, but they try to attract wealthy people from other places, you know, saying, you know, listen, you know, this is a, you know, can be a haven for you if you weren't resident here in the last 10 years or you're not a citizen or whatever the criteria is.
You know, what's really fascinating about that, if you go back to 1966, which really was the genesis of the U.S. expatriation regime and that sort of thing, where, you know, they changed their laws to basically, you know, make it fairly favorable for non-U.S. citizens or residents to invest in the United States, right? Fairly favorable. And, you know, that has continued. They of course have tightened it up. But along with that, as you point out, you know, they made it more punitive for residents and citizens, and particularly for those who they perceive as trying to achieve the same level of taxation that's afforded to foreign investors. And that's, you know, that was the genesis of the exit taxes.
For sure. And I mean, look, if they institute the wealth tax the way they're proposing it, you and I talked about this in a previous episode where it's essentially a mark-to-market tax.
Oh, it's the same. They might as well leave now. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that is an effect. Wasn't that also part of the Biden Green Book?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. But you know, it's just mind-boggling how stupid these governments are with these tax policies, where, you know, so many of them recognize that this is happening, that they create these parallel regimes to attract foreigners, basically the same, doing the exact same thing they're complaining about other countries doing to them. You know, where if they just made their tax laws a little bit more favorable and not so draconian, people wouldn't want to leave, and maybe people would actually want to live there.
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I think that the biggest sort of sort of the canary in the coal mine or whatever, the thing that's most visible is that in the United States, and I think in Canada to a lesser extent, I mean, how can tax policy make you know, the front page of the major media? I mean, there's something wrong with the tax system when it is discussed that much, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's a very good point.
And that is definitely where we are. All right, so, I mean, on that, as a way of sort of wrapping up today, but also... you know, as possible further discussion. You know, I recently been having some interesting discussions with people who are promoting, you know, this fair tax system, yep. Which is basically doing two things. I mean, it's getting rid of the income tax, which gets rid of all the compliance and, you know, doing the IRS a favor. Okay, of course.
Doing every citizen a favor, since they don't
doing
have
the
to
world
do
a favor. Doing the
world, world a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, having a, you know, a countrywide sales tax, essentially a VAT, you know, which they're pegging at, like, according to their statistics, 23%, which they think would be, you know, a replacement for the whole thing. You know, they're also proposing rebates for, you know, certain people below a certain income, what have you. But I'm just wondering initially what your thought on something like that might be.
I have two thoughts on it. So one thought is that, you know, for the United States, another huge benefit of that would be, the United States has a huge tourism industry, right? Just imagine the amount of money foreign tourists spend in the United States. And I know a lot of other people that are non-resident aliens that spend, that track their days and spend just under, the substantial presence test in the United States every year and pay no income taxes there. And, imagine what they would be paying in VAT. These aren't poor people, right? These are people with multi-million-dollar apartments in New York and houses in Miami. Sure. These people are buying cars, they're buying jewelry, they're buying, home appliances, furniture, whatever else. And it's a huge amount of money going into the economy. My fear is, which is something you pointed out before we got started, is if you have 53 or 56% of the United States population not paying income taxes to begin with, they're just never gonna vote for this because they're gonna be disadvantaged for it. It's certainly a more fair tax system. I would be thrilled to see a tax system like that in place, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, that's interesting. On a more sort of theoretical level, what strikes me about it is, all this thing about taxation, all these issues, it really comes down, I think, to a residence-based taxation as opposed to territorial taxation. Hundreds of years ago, every country just taxed the economic activity in their country, and that was it, right? Once residence taxation starts, all the treaties and all this horrible stuff. But for the U.S. to move to just a, in Canada or any of these countries, to move to a national consumption-based tax would also turn it into a territorial tax system, wouldn't it?
It certainly would.
Which I think is, sort of getting it back to its roots. Well, no matter what Monday it is, Jimmy, it's one constant is that these governments are trying to confiscate people's wealth one way or the other.
That is absolutely right.
And it's also true that no matter what Monday it is, the rich still have the means to avoid it, don't they?
They certainly do.
Validating lesson 18, great wealth, as if by magic, disappears when governments adopt taxation to soak the rich. The rich have always had the means to escape heavy taxation, no matter which Monday it is.
That's right.
Well, Jimmy, how would people get in touch with you?
EsquireGroup.com.
All right. Excellent. Great discussion today, and look forward to next Monday.
You too.